And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, morning, Mullywanji, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is the Reading With Your Kids podcast. We are coming to you from the beautiful neighborhood of Reedville in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so delighted and so very honored that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. Please be sure to tell all of your family and friends about the show. Tell your kids' teachers, their principal, their librarian. And, of course, please subscribe to the show on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. Our guest today is George Neeb. He's returning to the show to celebrate at the museum. Before we invite George back into the studio, we want to let you know that this episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast is brought to you by Bunky and the Walms, The Christmas Story, the multi-award-winning children's novel by our friend Alexandra Trinieca. It is the perfect Christmas gift. Bunky and the Walms is all about the power of friendship, dreams, and kindness. What will happen if one slightly grumpy Bunky has to become a brave Christmas hero, repair Santa Claus's sleigh, and deliver gifts all over the world? Bunky's quest to save Christmas will take him on a journey into his own heart. It's the novel that proves that we are what we strive to be and never what we are failing at. You're going to love this book. We are the dream we believe in. That's the great takeaway from this perfect Christmas dream. Bunky and the Walms, A Christmas Story by Alexandra Trinieca. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by thebiggodbooks.com. They are all about helping your little ones learn about our big God. Their new title is called A Little Love. In this book, we meet G, who's feeling sad. His best friend moved away, and now G is so lonely. He asks God for a new friend. Will God answer his prayers? Join G as he learns that God hears every one of our prayers, and that God answers these prayers, sometimes in ways we don't expect. You can pick up A Little Love today at thebiggodbooks.com. And when you do, you'll get exclusive bonus material that was thoughtfully designed just for you. This is a wonderful book. Your kids are going to love it. A Little Love by Andrea and Gabe Olson, the folks who are the driving force behind thebiggodbooks.com. Join us right now from Brantford in Ontario, Canada. Our guest is returning to the show to celebrate his brand new book. It's called At the Museum. Please welcome back George Neeb. Hey, George, how are you?
Hey, Jed, I'm great. Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
I'm really happy that you're here. Your books are fascinating. You have very unique illustration style. The books are fantastic. I think that they really give kids a way to embrace history.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, and it's the topic that I love writing most about. I've written a few other books that aren't about history, but these are always my favorite to write and to illustrate, and that's why I keep doing historical books.
Yeah,
I feel there's a need for them, and also my own personal enjoyment of creating them and researching them is what I really love doing about them.
You know, you are a teacher, and I'm guessing that you love teaching history. One of the things that kind of baffles me, I find history to be really fascinating. There are so many stories when we talk about history, but it seems like, I don't know if it's different in Canada, but especially when I was growing up in a lot of schools, history is all about just memorizing a bunch of facts and names and dates and stuff like that. It isn't engaging kids in the story and giving them the context and helping them understand why things happened and how that relates to us today.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's why I always loved picture books when I was teaching history. Now, I taught to a younger crowd, but that doesn't mean that older students don't love picture books too. But when I was teaching grade four, I would look for picture books that talked about history, because I've said before, there's so many information books about history where it's just giving facts and things. And those can be engaging too, with the illustrations and stuff for children. But a picture book has a main character. And I think when kids can relate to a character, to somebody that's living in that historical time, I think that that connection makes it more interesting to the kids. They can, you know, relate. I think it builds empathy. It builds compassion when they can relate to a character, not just facts or dates. So that's why picture books and narratives are so great for teaching about history, historical fiction even, where you can get the facts in there, but there's still a character that they can relate to.
All right. So what's the story we're going to experience with when we sit down with at the museum?
Yeah, well, this one's a little different in that it's still about history, but it's from the perspective of a museum. The other books that I've written about ancient Egypt and ancient China, where they were set back in those periods. So it was a main character living in ancient Egypt. It was about an emperor and a dragon in ancient China. This one's about a boy who's about 9 years old, whose dad wants to take him to the museum. And Ryan, the main character, is just hesitant. He loves video games, but he's not sure about the museum, the boring museum, he says. But his dad loves history, and I think he wants to pass that on to him, that there's more to do on a Saturday than just play video games. So he takes Ryan to the museum, but Ryan sort of grumbles and groans and moans, you know, just going to give his dad a hard time, until he sees the figures on an old Greek vase sort of magically come to life, and he gets drawn into this ancient Greek story. And that's about all I'll say, so I don't give any more away. But he's drawn back into history on this vase, and that's sort of the premise of the story.
You know, I think I recall being at the museum. There were a number of great museums here in Boston. Of course, the Boston Museum of Fine Arts is one, and they have an amazing collection of art from Greece. And I think I remember looking at some of that art and imagining it coming to life when I was a kid.
Yeah, the Greeks were great for drawing not just their gods and not just battle scenes, but they were drawing everyday life on these vases, these beautiful orange, black, and white vases that I guess were, you know, containers to them. They held olive oil, wine, water, but they're so decorative. It shows that they weren't just functional, they also loved the beauty of them and the shapes and the gracefulness of them. So yeah, looking at them, and I know historians have learned so much about ancient Greek everyday life just from these vases surviving. So yeah, you can see them coming to life. They're telling stories on the vase. So it's just the next step that they would become animated. And that's what I thought would make a great story, that he'd be drawn in by these vases. Mm-hmm. And I think ancient Greece also has, you know, the excitement of Medusa. Kids are always fascinated by that. The Greek gods, Zeus and Hercules and, Pegasus, the flying horse. So there's so much about ancient Greece that is fascinating when you can illustrate it for kids and they can see that. I think they're drawn in.
Mm-hmm. Was there an incident in particular, a field trip to a museum with your fourth graders perhaps, that inspired this particular book?
Well, I always took my kids to the ROM, the Royal Ontario Museum. That's in Toronto, Ontario. And they were fascinated by the mummies always because, you know, kids love ancient Egypt, the mummies. They were fascinated by the dragons of ancient China. I think Greece, too, just for the things I've talked about, would fascinate them. But I think when they got to the museum, it brought it all to life. So you can look in books all you like. But when you actually see the stuff face to face, I think really brings it to life. And that's the dad's quote, you know, museums bring history to life. he's talking figuratively, and then my book actually literally does bring history to life. But yeah, it's based on that. I think kids, you know, don't know what to expect if they haven't been to a museum. So I think, you know, when they get there, they're really fascinated. And that's what I wanted to bring out in the book is, and I say at the end, I hope you'll visit a real museum soon, because it goes the next step beyond any book. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. This conversation is making me think of this past Thanksgiving, and one of the bowls that we use on our Thanksgiving table, nothing matches. It's all kind of mismatched, but there's a bowl that my grandmother gave me, a big, big yellow bowl, and she used to put pasta in it. And, you know, we would serve these big family meals, and it was passed down to me. So I don't know how long my grandmother had it before she gave it to me 35 years ago, but it's not ancient, but it's old, and there's history there. And I'm imagining looking at something that came from hundreds, thousands of years ago, imagining that another human being used this on their kitchen table.
Yeah, there's so much a link for us to the past, I guess, and just to, you know, who used this and the stories that they can tell. And that's what's great about teaching kids history, because I mentioned that it builds empathy and compassion, but it also helps kids understand change and how our society has changed and why we live in the society we do, and that, you know, all the people before us had stories like us and helped build the culture that we live in. So I think it's important kids study history for that reason, that they learn where did we come from and why do we live the way we do. And all of that comes from the past. Studying these ancient cultures, to me, that's what makes it so fascinating. Yeah. And that they're all different, you know, they all have their own sort of differences. And, you know, back then their art was so reflective of their culture, not like today where it's sort of a melting pot of all the cultures, but back then it was so isolated. So I think the kids really like that too, when they can learn about the look of an ancient Egypt vase or the patterns and designs of Greek. They're so special to that culture.
Yeah.
There's so much you can do. I think the art is the part that I really love about it, is studying history. History and art go hand in hand, I think, when you're looking at these cultures.
Yeah, you know, we talk about books being mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors, and I think history is the same, especially in the sense of it being a window. You know, it can be a mirror helping us, as you said, helping us understand why we live the way that we live, but also important window to look at other cultures and see why it is they're living the way they're living and differently than us, and help, as you said, build that empathy for others. And hopefully that empathy will lead to understanding and friendships.
Yeah, definitely. I agree completely. So,
yeah. Now, you are always using really neat illustration. Your illustrations are always really fun and also very, very unique. What's the unique aspect of the illustrations for at the museum?
Well, these illustrations are done with cut paper. I've done a few books like this with cut paper, where I actually create the figures and cut them out and then stand them up in we would call it a diorama or a little mini, kind of almost a mini movie set, where you have your background and then I photograph them. It's almost stop animation, but I mean, it's simpler than that. But that's really how it's done, with cut paper. I use paint and pencil crayon on the figures and then photograph them. So each scene in the book, or each illustration in the book, is actually a photograph of an actual cut paper display, I guess, is how you'd say it. So that's what worked best, I thought, for this book. I did an ancient China book that way also, but with that one, I ran it through a filter to make it look like a silk painting. These ones, I ran it through a filter just to kind of smooth out the colors a little bit. But other than that, it's just the photographs of the scene.
Now,
so yeah, each, yeah, sorry.
No, it's go right ahead.
I was just going to say, each book I've tried to illustrate in the style of that book. So when I did the ancient Egypt books, I wanted them to look like papyrus, sort of tomb paintings almost. So I, you know, experimented a lot, and I used paint and a cloth to give texture over top. And then that's how I got sort of the Egypt look. The Chinese, I wanted to look like silk paintings. So again, I did cut paper, but then used a filter to add the texture of silk paper. So with these ones, it was more just using the orange and the black for ancient Greece, doing a lot of borders that were authentic to ancient Greece, learning how to draw them by hand on grid paper. And then the book, because it takes place in a museum, I was just photographing a little museum set I had. When he goes back into ancient Greece, I was using paint for the black vase, just direct painting the pictures. So lots of variety and lots of experimentation, but that's what I really like about illustrating them. It's my favorite part of the whole book process is the illustrations.
Yeah. It seems as if this is a very painstaking and really time-consuming choice. You are definitely committed to creating these very unique illustrations.
Well, I guess because it's the process of it is what I enjoy so much. It's the art part. So it would be, I've never used a computer to illustrate my picture books completely, like so many books are done with, and that takes a lot of skill that I don't have as far as on the computer, using like Photoshop or whatever to use. Maybe if I was just writing my books and hiring an illustrator, they would use computers to do the illustrations, but I don't have those skills, and I love the art part. And because I do illustrate my own books, often I'll be doing the illustrations and then the text will change as I'm illustrating. So the story's never set like it might be if I was doing it the other way, whereas I would be submitting the finalized text to an illustrator and then they would go ahead and illustrate it. My text is constantly changing as I illustrate. And what's great about that is if the illustration can tell the whole point, I can use less words. So I really like that. Sometimes I'll just be cutting words out because I don't need to say it because the illustration shows it. So it's a real process, probably done differently than some picture books, the way I'm doing them. But
yes,
it's the part I like.
It certainly is different. One of the questions that I ask author illustrators is what comes first, the words or the illustrations? And I get very different different answers from different illustrators. You are the first author illustrator who talked about it being an ongoing process, that as the illustrations are being created, it is actively changing the text, changing the manuscripts. That's fascinating. Was that something that you were aware was going to happen when you first started writing and illustrating books, or was it something that just was a happy surprise?
Yeah, I think probably a happy surprise the more I've done them. I think I'm doing it more now than I did in my first book. My first book, Pharaoh Zero, was about ancient Egypt, but I knew I had a vision that I wanted, how I wanted the illustrations to look. I just wasn't so sure I could do it because, you know, drawing in an ancient Egyptian style takes a lot of practice and a lot of research to make it authentic. But I had that vision, but I did write that story first, and I made that story rhyme because I wanted it to sound old. And I thought, you know, when they translate a lot of Egyptian stuff, it's very lyrical. Now that they understand what hieroglyphics mean. So I wanted it, I just thought that would make it sound older. And they use a lot of words, but so I wrote that, but I really had no clue starting out how difficult it was to write in rhyme, because it's not just so simple as the last two words in the line rhyme. There's a whole flow to it, the whole meter, it's called. So that took a lot of work with an editor to get that meter, which was painstaking. I'm not a writer, I've realized, of rhyme. So I did do the two books, and with some editing, I'm happy with them, I'm proud of them. I'm really proud of the illustrations, but I haven't written in rhyme again. So I don't think I will. So the next book I did was the Ancient China book. It's just straightforward prose, just writing it. That one, I did do the story first and had a hard time with the story because I had so much I wanted to tell, but it's a kid's book. So I worked with great editors. I worked with a couple editors on that to get it pared down because they like about 1,000 words for a picture book, under 1,000 words. And then I could do the illustrations. But even that changed a little, but not as much as the last couple books I've done, where the story is not completely changing, but the amount of words definitely I'm reducing as I see the picture come to life. Because you just have a vision. I do a little bit of a storyboard, but my storyboards aren't as great as they could be. It's when I finally get that illustration and I'm happy with it, then I see what still needs to be said. So yeah, it's a process for me also. This book, my latest book, I'm working with a traditional publisher, Young Dragons Press, there in the U.S., in Arkansas. So again, that was a new process for me, because my other books I had published myself. I had hired editors and I had hired formatters, but I was the one carrying the project. With this one, the publisher's carrying the product. So they still were really good allowing me flexibility with the words and stories, though, from what they looked at originally and what they finally, the end product had changed quite a bit, but they were fine and happy with that. So
I'm wondering, the styles that you illustrated in ancient Egypt, ancient China, Greece, these are styles, and I may be naive in thinking this, that evolved over hundreds and hundreds of years. I'm wondering, what do you think 500 years into the future, as they look back in the early 2000s, there's so much culture and art and everything. Is there something that could define the art of North America, 500 years in the future, do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I mentioned before, it's such a melting pot now of all these different influences and things. And even in the past, kids are fascinated how much the Romans borrowed from the ancient Greeks. Mm-hmm. So even when you're studying cultures of the past, they were borrowing and influenced by each other. As much as I said their art really stands out, you can see influences from Mesopotamia in Egyptian culture. You can see influences, like I said, the Romans loved ancient Greece, and they replicated it in their buildings, their clothing, their artwork. You know, they were influenced by a previous culture. So I think now it's sort of a melting pot. Maybe the process has changed as far as computers, I guess. We can do so much now with computers that, and that gives a different look than by hand. So maybe computer art will kind of define the time. I think we're getting back to a little bit more where people are looking at individual cultures more. I know a lot of books in Canada, picture books, are about our First Nations people and the struggle they've had in their artwork, and they're kind of reclaiming that, luckily for themselves. So maybe there's not as much sharing and influence, but we're looking more at where stuff came from now. So I don't know. I hope that answers your question,
but
some thoughts on it.
It's an interesting thought, and certainly there is no definitive answer, because we never know what's going to go on in 500 years from now.
Yeah, for sure. So,
well, I know that people right now are going to want to know where they can go to find out more about you and find out more about At the Museum.
Yeah, well, I have a website, georgeneve.ca. It's CA because I'm in Canada. All my books are available on all the online booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo here in Canada. So they're available online as the best place to find them.
Wonderful. We've had a great time speaking to George Neeb about his brand new picture book, At the Museum. George, thanks so much for being back with us.
Thank you, Jed. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Please be sure to join us for the next episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast. Our guest will be Mike Purewall. He'll be here to celebrate. His new book is called On Your Way. Hey, when you are on your way to check out Facebook or Twitter, would you consider connecting with us? Facebook.com/ReadingWithYourKids. At Reading With Your Kids on Instagram. At Jedly Magic on Twitter. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Jed Daugherty. And of course, we would love for you to visit our website, readingwithyourkids.com. If you are an author, you absolutely want to click the Authors Click Here button at the top of the page. Find out how we can help you celebrate your book with the world. If you're a parent, check out our blog, check out our newsletter, and also Use the contact button at the top of the page. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what we could be doing better. Let us know who you would like to hear on a future episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast. I've shared this story with a number of people. My son, many years ago, back in 2018, my son texted me one day out of the blue. And he said, you know, you should have LeVar Burton on your podcast. And I said, yeah, and I should have like $1 million in my bank account, but I don't see either one of those things happening. But I thought, why not? And I reached out, and sure enough, LeVar Burton was on the show just a few weeks later. If I can do it for my son, I can do it for you too. So do that at readingwithyourkids.com. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful. Of course, I want to start by thanking our guest, George Neeb. Please be sure to check out At the Museum. Also want to thank our sponsors, Andrea and Gabe Olson, the driving force behind the BigGodBooks.com. Their new book is called A Little Love. I want to also thank my dear friend, Alexandra Trinieca. Please be sure to check out her multi-award-winning children's novel. It's called Bunky and the Walms, The Christmas Story. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Rory Grady, Mirabella Q, Stephanie Davila, Jordan Saley, Skylar Strauss. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next edition of the Reading with Your Kids podcast.